Okay, we start here on the bottom of Papay Amud Bet, four lines from the bottom. We're going to do the sugya here of Hai Avarnika. This Avarnika has a number of interpretations. Rashi brings two interpretations, and then Tosafot brings a third interpretation as to how to explain it. We'll work through the first explanation of Rashi, and then we'll go back and look at the alternative explanations, since Rashi favors actually the second interpretation. So, Hai Avarnika, according to Rashi or Avarnaki, which Rashi says is a tree, Shetzilo Merubeh, that is a tree that has a lot of shade. It's a large tree with beautiful shade under it, that they used to plant for the princes, for the royalty, and they used to make benches underneath it, and they used to go there to eat, to relax, something beautiful in the yard. Davale the Reish Galuta, the exilarch, had one of those with Bustane in his orchard. Amale Ravuna Barchinino, Le'aved Mar Takanto, says, can you do something to fix it up so that I can go from my house to this Avarnaki tomorrow being Shabbat, and eat and have a seuda underneath the Avarnaki. Azo went ahead, avad kane pachot mishlosha. He went ahead and put up sticks or staves that were less than 3 tfachim away from each other. Now, in the first interpretation of Rashi, this is not necessarily around the tree itself, but rather he put up a small area within the bustane, within the orchard, where he made or encircled it with these sticks or staves. And he was intending for someone like the shomer to go ahead and rest there or sleep there or eat there. Because this was an area that was larger than Beit Sa'atayim. Shelo hukaf lidira, that was not encircled for dira, for living purposes. So what Rav Huna Bar Chinina was doing was building a small living quarters for the shomer within the bustane, within the orchard, in order to change it from being not hukaf lidira to being hukaf lidira. Also, Rava, Shalfinu. Rava went ahead and pulled them out. Similar to a story we saw earlier. Rav Huna Bar Chinina sets up what he thinks is going to be the solution for the Reish Galuta. And then Rava follows him in there and pulls them all out of the ground. And also Rav Papa, Rav Huna Breit, Rav Yeshua, who were Talmidim of Rava. And Naktinu Mibachrei. They picked up the sticks after him so that Rav Huna Bar Chinina, even if he wanted to, couldn't put it back together. So the Machar, Eitve Ravina the Rava. So the next day, Ravina posed this question to Rava. Now this is a question in the form of a rhetorical question. He's proposing the question as a support for what Rava did, which is, Ir Chadasha, Modedim Lam Yeshivata. A newer city, you measure the tchum of the city from where it settled. Mishana, and an older city, Mechomata, from the wall of the city. Ezui Chadasha, Ezui Yishana. What is a new city and what's an old city? Chadashah shukfa udusof yashva. A new city is a case where they put up the wall of the city, and only after putting up the wall of the city, they settle the city. Yishana yashva udusof ukva. An older city is a case where it was settled first, and then only after the fact that they put up the wall. V'hai nami, in our case here, is also kuhukfa udusof yashva. It's a case where the wall was already up, and then you put in the living space dummy. So what the suggestion here is, and is coming from a different place in Eruvin, which is Eruv Tchumin. In Eruv Tchumin, as far as the city is concerned, there's a difference between whether the wall was built prior to the residents being put in there, or whether the residents first built, and then afterwards they surrounded it with a wall. If the residents are first built, and then the wall surrounds it, then the wall there is to service the residents. And that's in the area where Yeshiva, they first settled it, and then Hukfa, they surround the wall. Therefore, the Tchum is determined from the wall, not from the residences, because they already existed. They filled out the whole area of the wall. On the other hand, in a city where they first build the wall, and then they later fill in the residences, then they got it backwards, and then only the core area where people are living, would you measure the Tchum from that area, because the wall doesn't matter. Wall was put there before it was a residence, before they filled out the area to be a residence. Right. Here it's for Tchumin, for Erev Tchumin, which is a 2,000 amot out of the city. So in the din of Tchumin, the city is considered to be dalet amot. The whole city is considered to be just 4 amot. It's considered to be that it doesn't take up space. So where does that 4 amot end? In the older city, 4 amot takes up the whole expanse to the wall, and then you get 2,000 amot out of it. In the newer city, you don't get to the wall. Within the walls, it's not considered to be dalet amot. It's only where the houses are that is considered dalet amot. From there, you count the 2,000 amot outward. So this case here says the same thing. The bustane, the orchard, already had a wall. And now he's trying to put a living space into the wall, which is exactly what you just said, which is a case of hukaf usof patach. You had the wall first, and then afterwards you put the living residences in. That doesn't work to make it hukaf l'dira. And that's Ravina's support for Rava's position here to take down what Rav Huna Bar Chinina did. Because Rav Huna Bar Chinina was trying to create a hukaf dira. You can't do that after the fact. You can't, after the fact, put a dira into the area that's already surrounded. So that's the first, it was a question posed by Ravina to Rava, but really in support of Rava's position. Then we have Amalei Rav Papa the Rava, and Talmid the Rava says to him, V'amar Ravasi, M'chitzot Adrachlin, Lo Shma M'chitza. M'chitza of Adrachlin, we actually call them Banaim, which are builders. The modern day Adrachal means an architect. Lo Shma M'chitza is not called a M'chitza. Alma. From this we would conclude, Kevin to the Tzniut Avidala, Lo Aviyam M'chitza. Since it's simply made for privacy, or to block temporarily other people from seeing what's going on, that it's not considered to be a mechitza, and it won't qualify to be considered a place of dira, or a mechitza, period. Hachanami, in our case, kevin tzniutav didilei, so over here, since he made the posts that he put up, or simply for tzniuta, to surround the area where the shomer would live, sit, or eat, lo avia mechitza, it's not a real mechitza. So as Rashi points out here, when they are made, came into the tzniyota, the builder, when he's building, puts up temporary walls there, for whether it's for his equipment, for him to sleep there, to work there, just to gain privacy from around him. As soon as he finishes his work, he's going to pick up the mechitzot, and he's going to walk away. He's not going to stay there. So those mechitzot are not considered to be real mechitzot, because they're only temporary in nature. They're simply put there for temporary privacy. Also over here, these staves or staves that you put in the ground to be a shiva for the shomer, they're only temporary. You're not going to leave them there. They're not going to be permanent. They're there if it's niyuta ba'alma. If that's the case, they should not be classified as real mechitzot or a real dira. If they're not classified as a dira, then you haven't done anything that's hukaf le-dira. So that's the second position or talmid of Rava to come along and give support to Rava, which is that this is, our case here is no different than that case of the mechitzot of the Adrachlin, and he wouldn't even qualify as mechitzot. V'yamar Rav Huna b'reid Rav Yeshua, the Rava. So Rav Huna b'reid Yeshua said to Rava, another Talmid of Rava giving support to Rava's position. V'yamar Rav Huna mechitza suya l'nachat lo shma mechitza. A mechitza that is made not to live there, but simply to guard that which is in between, protect that which is inside. Lo shma mechitza, that's not called a mechitza. Deha, Rava baravua, ma'arav la l'kula mechuza, arsiyata arsiyata. That Rabbi Baravua, when he was making Eruvin, Eruvei Chatzerot, in the city of Mechuzah, he used to do it by area. He didn't do the whole city. He didn't make the whole city into one single Eruv. He did it by subsections, neighborhoods that he put together, and he said, this neighborhood, this neighborhood, this neighborhood, and he separated them out. Why? Mishom Peira de Beit Horei. Because of these ditches for the animals. These ditches, they used to throw in the, seems to be the compost, the garbage that they had. Actually, it says here the pits of the dates or the pits of the figs. They used to throw in the leftovers into these pits, and the animals used to come there and eat. But these were large, deep pits. The reason that these pits cause a problem is because they are mechitzot that are made simply to protect that which is inside and not to act as mechitzot. Rashi calls these, or describes the city of Mechuzah in this manner, which is that you had, between each neighborhood, you had these deep pit ditches or pits that they used to put the pits in. So that was why they were called pits. Right here, Ein Lechoma, And the city had no wall around it. Umuvaot shel hashchunot mefulashim. And the mavui of each neighborhood was mefulash. It was open on both sides. Vasu mechitzot l'roshei hamivaot l'chol tzad shechutz la'ir. So on the sides that faced out of the city, they used to put up a wall or have something there to protect not the city, but to stop animals coming from the outside to eat the pits that were there, to eat what was in the pits. So those mechitzot, even though they were at the end of the mevo'ot, on the edge of the city, they were not considered to be mechitzot, and therefore were not able to be mitzarif, to bring the city together as a single entity, even though there was technically a wall around the whole city. It wasn't a wall, but it was these mechitzot, or these blockings, that stopped the animals from accessing these pits. But those walls, or those mechitzot, they're not classified as mechitzot, because they're simply there to protect the pits, or to stop the other animals coming into the ditches, not to protect the residences, or the residents of the city. Because of that, over here, you have a case, in our case also, where Rav Huna Bar Chinina put up the sticks or the staves. He wasn't putting it up there to put up real mechitzot, he was simply doing it there to protect the possessions of the shomer, not to act as real mechitzot. If that's the case, those are mechitzot asui l'nachat. And since that's the case, they're not real mechitzot. And then you don't have, again, a dira that's there. Kore alayu reish galuta. The reish galuta about these rabbanon, both Rava and all the rabbanon that supported him. Hachamim heim al dahara. Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which is describing the evil things that Bnei Yisrael are doing and how they're not repenting. They're going to end up being destroyed because they won't do what's right. It says, "Chachamim heim la'ara." They are wise to do evil. They're chachamim, but chachamim in the wrong way. They're planning and doing things for the evil. U'leheitiv lo yadav. And to do good, they don't know how. So over here, he's saying that about these Amoraim. They ruined his plan to go eat under the Avarnaki on Shabbat. And here are these chachamim. They come up with all these great pieces of information, but they're all against what he wanted, or against that Rav Huna Bar Chinina that would have allowed him to go eat out in his Avarnaki. So that's the first Lashon in Rashi, and the way Rashi reads it. Then Rashi quotes from the Tshuvata Geonim. And then he says, Zeh Lashon Ikar, that the way that the Geonim learned this Sugya is the right way to learn the Sugya of Yashar Be'einai Ma'od. And he says this is a much better way to read the Sugya, which is the case here is a karpaf, that is yoter mibeit sadayim shlo kifla dira. The same thing that we said before. It's an area, the bustana was an area that was surrounded, that was greater than beit sadayim, that was not hukaf the dira. But the arvarnaka is not a tree, but rather, kaminach sadra okuba shibonim amalachim betoch pardesh shalahem. Rather, it's a gazebo, or some sort of enclosure, that the kings build in the middle of their orchards, va'omeid be'emtze pardes, and it stands at the center of the orchard. Now, the Reish Galuta wanted to carry from the entrance to the orchard, which was by the house, until the Avarnaka, until this area in the middle. So what Rav Huna Bar Chinina did was, he created a pathway for him to get there. He put up staves between the doorway to the orchard all the way to the Avarnaki that was in the middle. That way, there would be mechitzot on both sides, and he'd be able to walk through that path from the beginning of the orchard to the Avarnaki, because now he's reduced the area that is surrounded by mechitzot to less than a beit satayim, because he's cut off that area. The path basically cuts it off from the remainder of the orchard. And by doing so, he could now carry from the entrance to the orchard to this Avarnaki in the middle, this area in the middle. Now, this area in the middle was much more solid than we said before. Before, we talked about a nice tree with shade under it and benches, and he wanted to eat there. It was fun, right, like a picnic. Over here, this was a more solid building in the middle, this Avarnaki. It was some sort of gazebo or enclosure. But they used to eat there or sleep there on a occasional basis. It was quasi-outdoor type of resting place that they would go to. They would eat and rest. And it had the equivalent of a dira, this shame dira. And that was Rava's objection to what Rav Huna Bar Chinina did, which is that Rav Huna Bar Chinina put up these staves because his assumption was that this is a place that's not hukaf l'dira, because you have the dira in the middle, and then the wall around it. And he was assuming that it was lo hukaf l'dira, and therefore he put up these staves to allow him to walk from the entrance to the of the bustana, from the orchard, into this avarnaki. So Rav says, why do you need that at all? This is an area that is a dira. And if it's a dira, hukaf the dira means that even an area larger than a beit satayim is considered to be covered, or you're able to carry within that area because it's hukaf the dira. Now, Ravuna bar Chinuna did not follow that direction, and that's the statement we're going to see in 1 second of Ravina, which is that the problem with here was that the dira happens after its hukaf. The orchard is built first with the wall around it. The avarnaki is only put in there after the fact. So since the avarnaki is put in there after the fact, it's a case of hukaf, ulusof patach. Case where you first put up the wall, and only afterwards did you put the dira in the middle. Because of that, Rav Huna bar Chinuna came up with a different solution. Rava objected and said, no, it's hukaf le dira. Therefore, you didn't need to put up these staves, and he went and he took them out. His students followed him in and picked up the staves. Next morning, they all wake up, and then they start telling Rava that he was wrong. And they go, oh my goodness. First one is Ravina. Ravina is the first one to tell Rava that what he did was wrong, because he brings the example from the city. The city with the wall. Was the wall there first, or were the houses there first? And it makes a difference. So too in our case, it makes a difference that the wall of the orchard was there before the avarnaki. Since the wall of the orchard was there before the avarnaki, it's a case of hukaf, ulusof patach, and that doesn't work for a dira. That doesn't make it into a beit dira. So that's the first case where Ravina says the rav is wrong, and since the dira is put in after the fact, that doesn't help you. Then you have his two students. His two students who backed him up the day before now come and say to him, well, you know what? Maybe it's not so right what we did because... So the first one is Rav Papa. Rav Papa said, then we have a Mavasi Mechitza that Draflin Lo Shema Mechitza. When you put up temporary Mechitzot, they're not real Mechitzot. And therefore, this Avarnaki in the middle of the orchard, it doesn't have real Mechitzot. It's something that is, it's quasi-temporary. I mean, it does stay there. It probably will stay there. But these aren't strong or good Mechitzot. And therefore, even if you think it should be a Dira, it's not really a Dira because it's not a strong, real walls that you're putting up. You're just putting up these temporary mechitzot for protection or to have privacy there. So when the king or the princes or the royalty goes out to there, their possessions would be surrounded, meaning that there would be nobody taking their possessions, and that they could rest there without people seeing them. Then along comes Rav Huna and says that mechitza asui l'nachat is not a real mechitza. Again, the walls that are put out in the avarnaki are not walls for the protection of the individuals, or to make it into a makom dira. It's again to protect the possessions of the person inside of the orchard, that they keep their, whatever they want to keep in that area, like their chairs or their pillows or their blankets. But in the middle of the varnaki, the walls are simply there to protect the items that are inside, not as walls for a dira. And again, those aren't real mechitzot. So basically his students turned on him. His students had supported him the day before. The next day, all of a sudden, remember that he's wrong. And that's what the Reish Galuta says to them, to the students, that he says, where were you yesterday? You only know how to do bad. Your planning and your wisdom is used for evil and not for good, because over here, they only remembered on the next day that they were wrong. So they could remember they were wrong on the next day, not on the day when they needed to fix it, which was Erev Shabbat. And they took away everything that Rav Huna bar Chinuna had done that would have allowed him to go out there. He says, what good are you that you come up with all your great lines today on Shabbat? We needed you yesterday to tell Rava that he's wrong. You're only telling him that he's wrong today. So that's the second explanation brought by Rashi, that he found in the Geonim. And that's the explanation that he favors, that he says makes more sense, and that Rava was making a mistake. Question is, why did Rava make such a mistake? Why did Rava make a mistake of a case of hukaf, or the sof patach, or the sof yeshav, which is that the dira was put in after the fact? We know throughout the perek already that that doesn't work to be a beit dira. How did Rava make such a mistake? So you have to suggest that the avarnaki is so significant to the orchard that when you build the walls of the orchard, that it's almost as if you had in mind for the avarnaki to be there, or that the avarnaki is so central to the orchard that it becomes as if it was at the first you were yashav, or the dira is there, and only afterwards you put up the wall. Obviously, we reject that, and his students show him why that may not be true, but that might have been Rava's havamino, or thought process, in objecting to what Rav Huna bar Chinuna did. That was Rashi. Tosafot, who accepts that second explanation of Rashi, but modifies it a little bit, he brings a third interpretation. That's what I said before. There's a third interpretation, which is that of the Rabbeinu Netanel. The Rabbeinu Netanel explains that he put up the kaneh pachot mishlosha. Shainu here, chik min hakotel arba fachim, atira kol abustano. He's using the solution that we had earlier in the parak, which is, what happens if you already had the wall there, and then you put the dira after the fact? How do you make it so that the wall now is a new wall? So we said before, you can make a pirza of 10 amot or more, and then fix that pirza, and that makes it into hukaf the dira after the fact. Or, you can put up a new fence that changes the dimensions of the area, as long as that new fence is at least 4 tefachim away from the old fence. And so that's what Rabbeinu Netanel suggests, Rav Huna Bar Kinuna did here. He put up these staves to make a wall that was more than 4 tefachim away from the original wall, to make it hukaf the dira. He was doing something new, making a new hekef, a new fence there, so that it would now become hukaf lidira. And the bustana originally was open from the house, and it was a case that it was hukaf lidira. The problem was that the house or the palace was put there after the orchard already had been surrounded. So it was a problem of, the case originally was where the doorway to the orchard was matched up with the doorway of the house, and the orchard was there first, so it was a problem of hukaf l'sof patach. Now, he's changing it to a case of patach l'sof hukaf by putting up the new wall internally. Now, Rava Savar, what did Rava think? Well, Rava went out and pulled all the staves out. Why did he pull the staves out? He says, D'lo tzarech klom mishum avarnika. He didn't read anything because of the varnika in the middle. And this is what Shaul mentioned before. There might be a difference between afagav du'ukaf l'sof patach. Enoch Hanami agrees with Rav Huna Bar Chinina that the house was only put into the orchard or entered the orchard after the fact. So it's a case of hukaf l'sof patach. Lo mahani, that doesn't work. But hukaf l'sof yashav mahani. There's a big difference between when you put up a wall and then you open up a house into that wall. That won't work to become a makom dira, or to consider it shehukaf l'dira. But over here, you're not simply opening up a doorway into it. You're putting a whole new house in there. You're building something in the middle of the orchard. That, according to Rava, is considered to be hukaf l'dira, even if you do it after the fact. There's a difference between opening up a house after the fact into the orchard area and saying that's hukaf l'dira. That does not work. But if you put a real dira in the middle of the walls, inside of the walled area, that would be hukaf l'dira. And that's what Rava does. Rava differentiates between a case of hukaf l'sof patach versus hukaf l'sof yashav. And that would be the difference, or the difference in opinion between Rav Huna Bar Chinina and Rava. Then you'll have the objections of his students who come along and say, look, even if you think it is yeshav, it's a dira, these walls aren't real walls. They're not real walls because either it's done for tzniut, it's done simply for protection, and so this is not really a yeshiva, this is not really a dira that's being placed in the middle of the orchard, and therefore it shouldn't work or shouldn't function to make it into a case of hukaf ulusof yeshav. Those are the three different ways to read this sugya. One is the first way in Rashi, in which the machloket is whether you can create the dira afterwards. Rav Huna Bar Chinina thinks you can create, put the dira with the staves in afterwards, and Rav objects to that. And his students support him, and rightfully support him in this case. That's number one. The second case in Rashi is that Rav Huna Bar Chinina said that this area is too big, and it's not hukaf the dira, so he put up the staves in order to allow him to carry from the entrance to the orchard or the house to the arvarniki. Rava comes and pulls him down, thinking that the Avarniki itself should make it into a case of a hukaf l'dira. His students support him originally, and then afterwards they back away from him, saying that this is a case of hukaf l'sof patach, or the hukaf l'sof yashav, and it doesn't work. Rabbeinu Netanel has a slight nuance on that, which is, everybody's agreeing that this is a case of hukaf l'sof patach, that the orchard was surrounded first in the doorway, or the palace, or the residence was opened after the fact. And that doesn't work. The question is, when you put a living space in the middle, does that work to make it into a new area? Meaning to make it into a hukaf l'sof yashav, which would work. Rav Huna Bar Chinina says it doesn't work, and Rava thought it should work. And his students show him that even if you think it should work, you have a problem here with the mechitzot. You didn't really create a dira. So those are the three different ways to learn it. Correct. But that's by Tchumin. So the question is whether you can really extrapolate. So you don't have to necessarily extrapolate it, but it's clear that the Ravina thinks that you should. And therefore he questions Rava based on that. That even by hukaf u'dushov yashav, it doesn't work. Right, that's the sugya. One other thing to note here is that Tosafot disagrees with Rashi's interpretation of what these pits were here. He objects to two things. One, Rashi says that the city, even if it had walls around, it would have been considered a private area, and they could have made an Erev Tchumin for the whole city, because it was an ear, what he calls the equivalent to an ear shel yachid. The reason it was called an ear shel yachid is because it didn't have 600,000 residents, like the Diglei Amidbar. And since it didn't have 600,000 residents in it, it was like a city of a yachid. And a city of a yachid, if you have a wall that surrounds it, you could have made an Erev in it. And therefore, the mechitzot that were around it, that blocked it, should have made it that he could have made an Eruv. The only thing that stopped him were these beidare, the Torah. These pits, these ditches that had the vegetables in them, they caused the problem because they were areas that didn't really function as mechitzot. They were mechitzot, but not real mechitzot, and therefore they caused the problem. That's the way Rashi learned this. Tell us what objects in two areas. First of all, he says Mechuzah was a large city, a very large city, and probably had 600,000 residents. But it was probably an Irshel Rabim. And he says, despite the fact that it's an Irshel Rabim, you can't make a single Eruv in the city. Only for Rishut Rabim that causes a problem, but the city itself could be made into a single Eruv. They had walls and doors on the entrances to the city. You couldn't make a single Eruv. But Tosafot says rather that these Beit Torei are areas or large pits that were greater than Beit Satayim. They were bigger than Beit Satayim, and that's what caused the problem. Because even though in general we say when you have food or items like that that are surrounded with the Mechitza, that's called Hukafta Dira. Over here, this is not Ro'oi L'machal Adam. It's made simply for the animals. And this animal feed and these pits that were so large, greater than Beit Satayim, they cause a problem because they're not Hukafta Dira. And therefore, they create separations between the different areas of the city. The different neighborhoods in the city would be separated by these large pits of Beit Satayim. The problem here is that the area is larger than a Beit Satayim, which is an area that's Asur. Since it's separating between the neighborhoods, they couldn't bring all the neighborhoods together. So therefore, Tosfot believes that the city had a wall put in after, a full-fledged wall put in after it was Nityashva, and the city could have had an Eruv, despite the fact that it was an Irshel Rabim. The only thing that was stopping them from bringing all the neighborhoods together were these large Bay Dare, the Torah, and that's because the Mechitzot of these pits were not real mechitzot, because they were mechitzot asur the nachat, and therefore did not separate them out. And then you have these expanses that are problematic in the middle of the city that you can't segregate. And because of that, they cause separations between the neighborhoods, and therefore they made an eruv in each neighborhood separately. Right, those are just two harot that Tosfot makes on Rashi's explanation. But again, we saw the three explanations that are brought by, two by Rashi and the one by the Rabbeinu Tanu and Tosafot. So I'm Rabbi Eli. Shemati mi Rabbi Eliezer afilu beit kur. Rabbi Eli says that I heard from Rabbi Eliezer that you can surround an area that is not ukaf l'dira, even up to the size of a beit kur, a large expanse. There's no such limitation as beit satayim. Everybody else thought that there was a cap on shel ukaf shelo l'dira beit satayim. He quotes from Rabbi Eliezer that he thought that there was this unlimited amount that you could surround without any problem. Where it says, Matnitin deloke Chananyo. Our mission is not like Chananyo, Detanyo. Chananyo mer, afilu hu I arba'im sa'ah, even if it's 40 sa'ah, ki istratio shel melech, like the big courtyard of a melech, then it's still considered to be fine and you can carry in there, even though it's not hukaf, l'dira. Am Rabbi Yochanan ushteyem mikra echad darshu. And they both darshan the same pasuk, that is, Rabbi Eliezer, quoted by Rabbi Eli, and Hananya, both quoted the same pasuk as their support, which is, Shinemar. The pasuk says in Melachim Bet, Vayi Shayahu lo yatsa chatzer hatikrona. So over there, it's when Chizkiyahu falls ill, he gets sick, and then Yishayahu comes to visit him and tell him that he's going to die from this illness, that he's bedridden now, and he won't get up from his bed. And as Yishayahu leaves, Chizkiyahu turns to the wall, and then davens to Hashem, basically to protect him, to do tshuva, and he eventually is saved. Hashem agrees to let him live. And here it's describing Yishayahu leaving the palace of Chizkiyahu. It says, "Vayi Yishayahu lo yatsa chatzer hatichona," before he had left the middle air courtyard. So, k'tiv, in the pasuk it says, the k'tiv is ha'ir. Instead of chatzer, there the word in the pasuk is ir. Ukrin and chatzer, but the way we read it is chatzer. Mikan, the stratia shemelech, shayu ki ayarot benoniyot. So why does it use the chatzer and the ear interchangeably? That's to teach you that this istratio, which Rashi describes as rechava, sha'achorei, the backyard that was behind the palace of the king, was the size of a middle-sized city. For what's the size of a middle-sized city? That's what they argue about. So Michael Miflige, my sabar ayirot ben uriot avian bekor. Rabbi Eliezer believes, or what Rabbi Eli brings the name, Rabbi Eliezer believes that a middle-sized city is a bekor. And therefore, if you surround something even up to a bekor, that's still considered to be fine to carry around. Whereas, my sabar mem sabian, he thinks that it's 40 sa'ad, that it can still be called a chatzer, can still be called a courtyard, a rechava, if it is at that size. So they learned it now from the Pasuk that a chatzer can be the size of a city, and yet it'll still be called a chatzer, even though it's not hukaf de dira. How do we know it's not hukaf de dira? Rashi says, because it calls it chatzer ha-tichona, not chatzer ha-chitzona. If you wanted to call it a courtyard in which the door of the palace opened into, then it would have called it the chatzer ha-chitzona, the outer courtyard. The fact that it calls it the middle courtyard is indicative of the fact that that was not the courtyard in which the palace opened into, but simply the rechava, the backyard, an area surrounding the palace, but was not hukaf the dira. So you see that even though it wasn't hukaf the dira, it was still called a chatzer, and therefore they believe you can carry in these areas even though they're much larger than Beit Sa'atayim. Now the Gemara digresses to explain the pasuk. Vishaya, ma bayihotam. Vishaya, what is he doing in the chatzer atichuna? Why was he there? He left the king already. Why didn't he go home? What's he doing in the chatzer atichuna? Amar Rabbi Baruch Kohana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Malameid, Shechalach Hizkiah, that Hizkiah fell ill, which we know from the Psukim, Valach Yishayahu, Veoshiv Yeshiva al-Pitcho. He went ahead and gathered the students and opened up a yeshiva right by the doorway, right near the palace. Mikan. From this we learn that Talmud Chacham Shechalah, that if you have a Talmud Chacham that falls ill, Shemoshim Yeshiva al-Pitcho. He opened up the yeshiva right by his doorway in order to be a zchut for the person who is ill, in order to bring him help, that he should be cured. And the Gemara says, Valav Miltihi. It's not a good idea. Because it might provoke the Satan. The fact that you're making such efforts to protect the individual inside, that might instigate or provoke the Satan to come work harder at taking care of this ill person. And when the Satan takes care of the ill person, it doesn't end up well. So you don't want to invite the attention of the Satan. And therefore, even though you're doing it for positive purposes, it might end up having negative ramifications. And so we say, don't open up the yeshiva right by the person who is ill. Right? I mean, because over there, Yishayahu has a nevuah that Chizkiyahu is going to die. And so at this point, as the Marsha suggests, is that the only way for him to go was up, meaning that he was supposed to die. So the only chance was that he would live. And so therefore, in this case, it might have been different than a normal case. I also heard from Eliezer that if one of the people in the Eruv forgot, they put the Eruv in, and then later on he's mevatel his rights in the Chatzer to the unreigning parties, that his bayit is asur to take out to the Chatzer for him, but the remainder of the parties can take in and out of his house. Vatznan, later on in the Masechta we have a Mishnah, beito asur lo tzil lachnis lo vilahen, that his house remains a sur not only for him, but is a sur for all the parties that are in this chatzer. You have a courtyard with shared ownership. All the people in the shared ownership made an Eruv together except for one person. He didn't join in. He's a problem now for the Eruv. So what does he do after the fact? He's mevatel. He relinquishes control over his property in order to make it that everybody is in the Eruv. Once they do that, we have Rabbi Eliezer saying, well, now all the other parties in the courtyard can carry from their houses into the courtyard, because now we have a single ownership, and they can even carry from the courtyard into his house. The only person who can't carry is the individual who owns the house. He can't carry from the courtyard into his house. Rashi explains it here, the difference being that when the other people carry from the courtyard into his house, they're not demonstrating anything, they're just showing that there's a single ownership here. When he carries from the courtyard into his house, or his house into the courtyard, we have a problem, because it's as if he's reasserting his ownership over the house. And that's why he's the only one who is left out of the picture here. Whereas the Mishnah later on in the Masechta says, not only is he precluded from carrying from his house into the courtyard or the courtyard into his house, everyone is precluded. His house is out of the picture. Courtyard is now given to be joint ownership from his giving up or relinquishing control in the courtyard, but his house remains private property and is not included in the Eruv, basically, so nobody can carry in and out of his house. So then the question is, why? Why do we have a difference? So I'm Rav Huna, Breder of Yeshua, Rav Sheshet, Lokasho. That's not a problem. The difference being between this Mishnah later on in the Masechta and what we have here is, Ha Rabbi Eliezer, Ha Rabbonon. The difference is between Rabbi Lezer and the Rabbanan. Rabbi Lezer believes, like we just quoted in our Mishnah, that there's a difference between him and the other individuals in the Eruv. Whereas later on, it's the Rabbanan who think there is no distinction between him and the other individuals. So now, Ushukatim Tzolomar, what conclusion can you draw from this? The Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, Hamavatel, Rishut Chatzero, Rishut Beito Bitel. According to Rabbi Eliezer, when a person relinquishes his control over the courtyard, he not only relinquishes his control over the courtyard, he relinquishes his control over the house. He gives everything. He gives generously. With an ayin yafeh, and he relinquishes his control not only over the courtyard, but his house as well. On the other hand, the Rabbanan, Hamavatel, Rishut Chatzero, Rishut Beito, Lo Bitel. That when a person gives up his ownership in the Chatzer, he does not give up ownership in his house. You can separate between the house and the courtyard. And so therefore, when he says, or gives in, relinquishes control of the courtyard to allow the Eruv to go through, he still maintains ownership over his house. And that obviously lead to the difference in their opinion. Rabbi Lezer thinks that everybody can carry in and out of his house because he relinquished control of his house. The only one who can't is he, because then he would be reasserting control over his house. On the other hand, when the Rabbanan say he gave in the courtyard, you can carry in the courtyard and he carried from the courtyard to the other houses. But his house is out of the picture because he didn't relinquish control over his house. He only relinquished control over his joint ownership inside of the courtyard. So when it says pshita, that's simple. That's of course the conclusion. Of course the conclusion is that Rabbi Lezer thinks that a person relinquishes control generously, and the Chachamim think he does it in a miserly fashion. So, Amar Achva, Anav Ravuna Bar Chinuna Targemna. We explained what the conclusion Rav Sheshit was trying to draw from here was. You have five people living together in a single courtyard. One of them forgot to join the Eruv. When he relinquishes control over his property, he doesn't have to go to each individual in the courtyard and say, I relinquish my control to you, I relinquish my control to you. He does it to one, and that's as if he did it for all of them. Because when he relinquishes control, he does it in a generous fashion. That generosity means that once he relinquishes to one of them, it meant that he wanted to relinquish to all of them. On the other hand, the Rabbanan, Shumavatel Rishuto, Tzrich Levatel Luchol Echad Ve'Echad. He has to either explicitly say it, or go to each one of them, and relinquish control to each one of them, because when he relinquishes control, he does it in a miserly fashion. And if he relinquishes control to this individual, it doesn't mean that he relinquishes control to the other individuals. And therefore, he has to go to each one of them, in order to relinquish control over here. Now, even though, when he's mevatel his reshut to one of them, Rashi points out, the other individual was in the Eruv. So when he mevatel his reshut to one individual there, it's as if now he should be included in the Eruv. It's as if this one person owned the property beforehand, if he relinquishes control to this one person is included in the Eruv, then that should solve the problem. Why do you need the other four people? So Rashi says that to be included in the Eruv, we have to know what you own on Erev Shabbat. Here, you're only getting control over the property on Shabbat itself. And therefore, that's not included in the Eruv. The Eruv won't automatically cover that. Even if someone comes into possession of an item on Shabbat, then that doesn't get included in the Eruv. You have to be in possession of whatever items you're talking about, or whatever property you're talking about before Shabbat came in. So even though he's mevatel, relinquishes control over the property to one individual who's already a part of the Eruv, that doesn't solve your problem. Because the Eruv was in place already on Erev Shabbat. Comes to Shabbat, the Eruv can't now include this new piece of property, and that's why he has to mevatel reshut to each individual in the Eruv. According to the Chachamim, he has to do it literally to each individual. According to the Lezer, by doing it to one, he effectively relinquishes control to all of them. Keman Azla Adetanya, who does it follow this Braita? Chamisha Shishurim B'chatzer Achad, V'shachach Achad Me'em V'lo Yirev, Shemavatel Rishuto, and Tzirech Levatel Rishut L'Kol Echad V'Echad, Man K'Rabbi Eliezer. That follows the position of Rabbi Eliezer, that you only have to relinquish control to one and not to all of them, because it's an effective relinquishing to all of them. Rav Kahana Matnei Hochi. That's the way Rav Kahana had this whole piece laid out. Rav Dav Yumei Matnei Hochi. He learned this way. Man Azla Adetanya. Who does it follow this Braita? Hey, Shishurim B'chatzer Achad V'Shachach Achad Me'em V'lo Yirev, Shemavatel Rishuto, and Tzirech Levatel Rishuto L'Kol Echad V'Echad. When you have this courtyard is shared by five people, and one of them forgot to be in the Eruv. When he relinquishes control, he doesn't have to relinquish control to all of them, just to one of them, and it's effectively to all of them. Come on. Amar Rav Huna Bar Yehuda Amar Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet says, come on, Rabbi Eliezer. That's like Rabbi Eliezer. So the difference in these Lashonot is that in the first Lashon, we had a statement from Rav Sheshet, and then afterwards, we had the explanation of Rav Huna Bar Chinina and Rachva to explain what Rav Sheshet meant. That Rav Sheshet meant that relinquishing control to one or all is the machloket or the conclusion you would come to from these two opinions of Rabbi Lezer and the Rabbanan. In this second Lashon of Rav Tzvi Yumi, we have the statement from Rav Sheshet himself. Rav Sheshet himself is the one who's saying that relinquishing control is the difference between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim. In effect, it's the same thing, but in one case, we have some people explaining Rav Sheshet's opinion. Right, it's a second-hand explanation of what he meant. Over here, we have Rav Sheshet himself giving the explanation of what he meant, or what he concluded from the machloka between the Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim. Amalei Rav Papa Labaye, this is the question, Shaul, that you posed, which is, Rabbi Elazar, Iyamar lo mevatlina. What happens, according to Rabbi Elazar, if he says that I relinquish control over my courtyard, but I do not relinquish control over my house? Rabbi Elazar says that when you relinquish control in the courtyard, you automatically relinquish control over the house. What happens if he states, no, explicitly, that it doesn't work? I don't want my house to go with the courtyard. According to Rabbanan, when you relinquish control over the courtyard, you do not automatically relinquish control of the house. What happens if he explicitly says, I do? I give up my house along with the courtyard. Does it work? So my time at the Rabbi Elazar. What's the reason behind Rabbi Elazar's opinion? A person who relinquishes control over the courtyard automatically relinquishes control over his house. But over here he says, I'm not being mevatel it. So he undermines what is the supposition that we would have in his statement. So if he does that, then it won't work, meaning that it'll separate between the courtyard and the house. Oh, people don't live in a house without a courtyard. He can't do that. Once he's relinquished control of the courtyard, he's basically effectively relinquished control of the house, because nobody lives in a house without a courtyard. And since he no longer has a courtyard, he also no longer has a house. Even though he says, I'm willing to live in a house without a courtyard, Lav klum kamar. We say batel dato etzol kol adam. That's a crazy thing. Nobody lives in a house without a courtyard. So if that's the case, if he relinquishes control of the courtyard, it's automatic that he relinquishes control of the house, and he has no say in that. He can't change that because nobody lives in houses without courtyards. Ula rabbanon. Yeah, marmer vetlin my time of the rabbanon. What is the case by the rabbanon? Bishum de kasavrei mevatel rishut chatzera rishut beitol lo bitel. Is that because when a person relinquishes control over the courtyard, he does not relinquish control over his house? And he's saying, I am relinquishing control. So our supposition is wrong. And if he's saying explicitly that he is relinquishing control, then he can't do this. Oh, Dilma. The person's not willing to give up all of his possessions, all of his ownership. He's willing to give up a portion of his ownership. So he'll relinquish control of the chatzer, but not the house. And he's like a guest by them. So if he relinquishes total control, he's going to become a guest in this area. He can't say that, because nobody is willing to give up all their ownership rights, because they don't want to be a guest in their own home. So they don't want to be a guest in their own home, so they relinquish partial rights, not total rights. And therefore, even if he says, I am being mevatel the house, it won't work, because then he's relinquished all control or all ownership here, and he wouldn't be willing to do that. Amalei, so he answered him, ben the Rabbanon, ben the Rabbi Eliezer, gave him dali dali date gali. So here's the answer to the question, Shaul. If he explicitly states it, then he can do whatever he likes. There's a Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim each have a underlying supposition or default. When you relinquish control of the courtyard, Rabbi Eliezer says when you relinquish control, you relinquish the courtyard and the house. And the Chachamim say no, just the courtyard and the house. But if you state explicitly otherwise, it works. You can do whatever you say. That'd be the answer to whether you can do it or cannot do it according to Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. You also heard from him in Yana Dioma that you can use Arkabalin for Maror on Pesach. What is this Arkabalin? Amrei Shlokish, Atzvata, Charuziyato. This is some machloket. You can already see Rashi and Tosafot disagree on what it is. It's some sort of prickly creepers, or heart's tongue, or palm ivy. Those are the three different solutions. You can see in Rashi and Tosafot that they give different explanations as to what it is. Rashi says it's the sieve. It's some sort of growth that comes around the palm, that is on the outer edge of the palm, that's bitter. The Tosafot seems to indicate that it was something that was a zera but grew around, or mesa grown around the palm tree, but not that it was literally a part of the palm tree, because we know that maror is a vegetable, not a tree. It doesn't come from a tree, but a vegetable. So therefore, it might be this palm ivy that are going to Tosafot. But whatever the explanations are, everybody in the end agrees that we don't subscribe to Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, and our kabbalin cannot be used as maror. All right, we'll just begin the new Mishnah. for the parak, and then we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow. All right. V'chol me'arvin u'mishtatfim chutz mimayim u'melach. You can make an eruv and a shituf mevo'ot with anything except mayim u'melach, water and salt. Water and salt do not qualify as food, and therefore they cannot be used. Rashi over here says for eruvei chatzerot and eruvei tuchumin. They can't be used for an eruv for chatzer, the eruv chatzerot to make the chatzer into an area they can carry, eruvei tuchumin. It's to make it a location as if you lived in that location and you changed the dynamic of your 2,000 amot that you're allowed to walk. Tosafot disagrees and says that it has to be that we're talking about eruvei tchumin here, not eruvei chatzerot, because the Gemara always says eruvei chatzerot has to be done with pat, has to be done with bread. So that's only them at tchumin and not chatzerot. Then, v'alkol nikach b'kesev ma'aser, here we're talking about ma'aser sheni, ma'aser sheni that you take up to Yerushalayim. After you've separated the ma'aser sheni, it's too much to carry up to Yerushalayim, you redeem it on money. You take up the money to Yerushalayim, you have to then purchase with that money food items in Yerushalayim to eat. So one of the things that you're not allowed to purchase with the Ma'aser Sheni money is chutz min ha'mayim ha'melach. Mayim ha'melach do not qualify as food that you're allowed to use for the kesef Ma'aser Sheni for. The Gemara will explain why that is. Hanuder min ha'mazon. Somebody takes a neder that he won't eat from anything that is sustaining in nature, from mazon. Is mutar b'mayim u'melach. He can eat water and salt because that's not included under items that are considered to be mazon. Marvin l'nazir b'yayin u'lisrael b'tshuma. The Tanakhama says that you can use for a nazir wine as an eruv, and for an Yisrael you can use truma, even though neither of them can eat it. They can't eat the a nazir can't drink the wine because he's a nazir. Yisrael can't eat the truma because he's not a kohen. Despite the fact, if you make an eruv tchumim for this individual with these items, it works, even though they're not able or capable of eating the items. That's the Tanakhama. Sumchos omer, bechulin, that you can use it, ulukohen bebeit pras. That you can only use chulin, you cannot use truma. For Israel, you cannot use truma, you can only use chulin, ulukohen bebeit pras. And for a kohen, you can put it even in a beit pras. You can put it in an area that has safek tumatamate. It's an area where there was a grave that was plowed over, and there's a safek over that area as to whether the mate got distributed, and if you walk through there, whether you're going to become tamay. So that's kohen, you can even put it in there, because there are ways to get around it. There are ways to go through a beta press or check a beta press that would allow you to put it there in the kohen to access the food. Now, Sumko's only argued on the kohen and the truma part over here. He does not argue on the nazir b'yayin, and that the Gemara will address why he didn't think by the nazir b'yayin that there was a problem. He only argued on the case of Yisrael b'truma, which is that you only could use chulin, and the kohen b'beta press. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilu beta kavavarot. You can even, for a kohen, put the food inside the cemetery. Over there, we're not talking about a safek tuma anymore. We're talking about real tuma here. Because he has the ability to enter into the Beit HaKvarot. He can enter in, as Rashi says, v'shida teva u'migdal, some sort of enclosed area that will protect him, because it's an oil in itself. It'll protect him from the tuma that is in the Beit HaKvarot, and he can access the food without becoming tamei. Since he can access the food without becoming tamei, therefore we say that he's allowed to use that as his eruv, eruv tchumin. Even though that's not what he does in the end, unless the fact that he has the ability to do that is enough to make it that it's a functional eruv for him as an eruv tchumin. Right, so the Gemara will discuss all the items that we just mentioned in the Mishnah.